Welcome to another edition of the Super Flight Podcast, your Jean Mironian NBA podcast. Because like Miro, a lot of things that say James Harden and Russell Westbrook and LeBron James and Kevin Durant and all of these guys are doing on the court is very surreal. That's all I'm saying. Welcome to the show, everybody. It is Sunday, March 26th. I recorded this two nights ago on Friday night, but I'm just getting around to doing the editing now, so I'm giving you the beginning right now. I'm your host, as usual, Joe Borelli. And if you guys and gals want to follow the show and you want to reach out and say hi, you can do so in a number of ways. You can follow the show at the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, almightyballer.com. You can follow along on the superflightpodcast.com. You can listen to all the shows there. You can tweet at the show or follow the show on Twitter at superflightpod. You can follow me personally at Joe Borelli. You can follow on Facebook. You can follow on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes. And if you follow on iTunes, please rate and leave a review so that other people can find the show. Because when you like it and rate it and review it, other people, I guess it gains traction and it becomes easily... much easier searched. It comes up quicker in the searches, I guess, for other people when they're looking for NBA shows. And this is one of many, but one that you really enjoy. I know. Thank you. I enjoy you too. Anyway, listen. So last week, I made a little bit of a goof, and I said that James Harden hadn't been selected to the All-Star team last year. Not correct. He got in as a reserve, and I fumbled the ball on that, so I just wanted to correct myself. But he didn't get it in to any NBA teams. And we talk about that later because I goof it up again. And so I thought I'd correct it before I get there too and before you actually hear me get corrected on the podcast. and that, there's another big blunder I had. Last week on the opening, I used Dana Schutz as my opener, my opening artist that I usually do, right? And boy, was that a mistake, because I don't know if any of you follow what's happening. Not that it was a mistake because Dana Schutz is a terrible person or anything, or she's a horrible artist, whatever. She's a good artist. That's why I mentioned her. It just happened to coincide with the fact that she made a painting of Emmett Till, who was a young black man and was murdered in the 50s, and she painted this painting and put it in there, and I know that they did this with good intentions, but it has been under a lot of fire lately. She's been getting a lot of heat for cultural appropriation, and she didn't really think about it before she did. I'm not putting words in her mouth. I don't know the woman personally. I've met her once, and she seemed very lovely. I like her work, but it's usually very like romantic and whimsical, and I know that, like, I don't think, you know, I don't think there was any malicious intent in this, really. I don't think she meant to speak for people of color when she has no idea about that as a white woman. I'm sure that was not the case. And when they asked her about it in the interview, she said she was approaching it from the viewpoint of a mother. But even in that, it's not right. It should be taken down. And I hope nobody thought that I was trying to make a point of having her as my opener just to stir headlines or just not stir headlines. Nobody's writing about the show, but just to grab your attention or anything like that. I just literally did not realize. I didn't know. It was just pure coincidence. Anyway, if you happen to be in New York and you get to go to the Whitney, you should go. I haven't gone to this show yet. I haven't been to the Whitney Biennial yet. I plan on going next weekend, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, hopefully there will still be protests going on while I'm there, and it should be fun. In other news, something that happened this week. So I was at an event, and I was drinking a little bit, not paying attention to what I was doing. You know, I mean, I was paying attention to what I was doing. I was just, you know, I was having a few beers. So I had to use the bathroom like one does when they have a few beers, hanging out. And it's a really packed area, and you have to go down these stairs to get to the restroom. And apparently, one of my friends let me know later, I almost knocked Chelsea Clinton down the stairs. Had no idea she was there. So Chelsea Clinton, if you ever hear this, I'm that big jerk that almost knocked you down the stairs. I'm really sorry. I didn't know. I apologize. Big fan. Anyway, I mean, you know, the point is that, like, there is no point to any of this. This is a basketball podcast. I don't know why I'm telling you guys this. So there you go. Just a few fun little things that happened in my life this week. I'm going to cut it short because otherwise I'm going to ramble on about how, you know, when you have a platform and you have a medium and you're in the public view, you need to be very careful about the things you say and the things you do. For instance, if you have a podcast, or if you're a painter and you paint something that you think is provocative in a good way and it turns out to be provocative in a really bad way, you really need to think those things through. And in the case of a podcaster such as myself, I've gone down the road of saying some really stupid things that I have had to edit out. Not because I'm malicious, not because I'm a bad person, just because I don't think they're going to land the way they do. And luckily for me, I have people around me that keep me from making these stupid mistakes. I understand that we all do this. And man, when I was young, I said so many stupid things. And I'm not so young anymore, but I still say so many things that are just really dumb and questionable. So please forgive my big mouth. I hope you enjoy listening to it. And you're going to be able to listen to it all over the place soon, because I don't know if I'm even allowed to talk about it yet, but I will, maybe next week. So with having said all of that, it's a big week of basketball coming up. And Salman Ali is going to come up and talk to me from, well, we talked the other night, but you'll hear the interview from Friday night when we talk about the Houston Rockets and James Harden's potential MVP candidacy and Mike D'Antoni's Coach of the Year candidacy and Eric Gordon's Sixth Man of the Year candidacy and Daryl Morey's Executive of the Year candidacy. I got to stop saying candidacy. It's a lot of hard word to get out of your mouth, candidacy. Anyway, all of that should be fun. Hang out, everybody. And after these short commercial messages, we'll be right back. Today's Superflate sponsor is GlassesUSA.com, where you can get quality prescription glasses at up to 70% off retail price. At GlassesUSA.com, you can choose from a huge selection of frames in more than 2,500 styles. From in-house brands such as Muse and Amelia E, to designer brands like Ray-Ban, Oakley, Adidas, and Armani, GlassesUSA.com is the only website you'll ever... Oh, forget it. I keep making this joke. Go to GlassesUSA.com now and you can try on any pair of glasses using their virtual mirror feature by simply uploading a photo, importing from Facebook, or using the camera on your computer. I've done it myself. I really need glasses. I can't see without them. I went to GlassesUSA.com. I picked out a pair of glasses that I really liked. I uploaded a picture of my own face, which is weird, by the way. But when you get to see yourself on the computer, forget it. Anyway, so you pick out the glasses you like, you align them on your face with the virtual mirror tool. There's an alignment tool so that you can't mess it up. They're going to look exactly how they'll look on your face when you buy them. There's no worry. If you're not completely satisfied, you can send it back and they'll return your money 100% within 14 days. So go to GlassesUSA.com now and enter promo code ALMIGHTY, that's A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y, to get 55% off of any pair of glasses at checkout. Okay, now back to the show.
Hey, is that audio clear?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear enough. It's clear enough for someone who pulled over along the side of the road and decided to call into a podcast. So, yeah, it's great.
I know. It's like, I know this area. So, like, this is like after Rockets games and I have to record like an emergency podcast, I go to this park that I know of. Like, I used to go here all the time. So, it's not even like a creepy thing or anything.
Says you. I'm a little creeped out. Anyway, Salman Ali, welcome to the Superflight podcast. I'm recording already, so let's get into this thing. Since you want to get home watch the Rockets game, and I want to go to bed. So, so tell my listeners how they can find you and where they can follow along and how they can listen and read your stuff.
Yeah, so for Twitter, you can follow me at Red Nation Hoops. For the website, I own a website called RedNationHoops.com. We got lots of talented writers over there. And yeah, that's where you can find our stuff. And we have a podcast, obviously, the Red Nation Hoops podcast, and we're on the Almighty Bond podcast network.
Awesome. Yeah, this is obviously how we got in touch, but... gotta love the Almighty Baller. It's made my life so much easier finding guests. And thank you for coming on, by the way.
Yeah, no problem.
So we're going to talk a little bit tonight about, we're going to talk about the Rockets. Let's talk about Harden's MVP candidacy. We're going to talk about Eric Gordon as a sixth man candidate. We're going to talk about Mike D'Antoni as a potential coach of the year. And then we'll talk about how far the Rockets can go in the playoffs. Sound good to you?
Sounds good.
Cool, man. So let's start out with Harden's MVP candidacy. So let me throw some numbers at you, which I'm sure you probably already know. So he's averaging, James Harden right now is averaging 29.4 points per game, 11.2 assists, which is crazy, 8.1 rebounds, and he's eighth in real plus minus in the league. And he's third in the league in 3 points per game. Those sound like some really great MVP numbers to me. But I think even more than the numbers is the fact that he's just really controlling this team. He was moved this year from the shooting guard, from starting shooting guard in D'Antoni's system to the starting point guard, which is kind of crazy because I don't think anyone in the league thought of James Harden as a point guard before this year. But D'Antoni obviously saw something in him that thought, you know, made him think. And I think he ran the point a little bit when he was in OKC too, but he switched him to point guard full time, and he's been flourishing in this system and doing just amazing things. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you think his chances are of winning the MVP?
Right now, I think he's a front runner, and the race is pretty close. But like a couple things kind of swayed me that way recently. I didn't think this way for a long time. For a while, I thought it was going to be Russ. I mean, this recent straw poll by the Post conducted by Tim Bontemps, it showed, you know, Harden coming out ahead by a pretty comfortable margin, and it had like 115 media members, and you know, every media MVP race ladder you look at, like whether it's USA Today or whether it's NBA.com's official MVP ladder, Harden comes out on top in first place, and it looks like that's kind of where everybody's kind of steering towards. And it's going to be really interesting, this head-to-head matchup on Sunday against the Oklahoma City Thunder on at 2:30. It's going to 2:30 p.m. Central Time. That's going to shift a lot of people's opinions in my view. And I'm kind of fascinated to see how it works out in these last few weeks of the season.
Yeah, and it's crazy that like we don't really want to. I mean, as a fans and as, you know, writers and podcasters and everything, we don't really want to put too much stock into one game of the season to decide the MVP race. But it kind of seems like it might boil down to like that one game. I mean, there's obviously what, 12, 13 more games left in the season. And you're talking about like a very large sample at this point. It's been almost the entire season to decide, or not decide, but see, you know, what these players are doing. But that game, as you mentioned, is going to play a huge part, I think, in deciding people's minds about who's going to get the MVP ultimately. But what do you think the reason is for him being the front runner right now? I mean, because you have Russell Westbrook, who's averaging a triple-double, which hasn't been done since, I think, 62 or 63 or 66. One of those years in the 60s when Oscar Robertson did it. It's an incredible feat. And somehow still, James Harden is leading. I mean, it looks like he's leading the race. And what do you think the reason is for that? What do you think he's doing that Russell Westbrook or LeBron James or dude from San Antonio, whose name I can't remember because I'm drawing a blank. I'll erase that part. What do you think he's doing that those guys aren't? That's going to put him in the front and make him potentially win the candidacy, win the MVP.
Well, number one, to differentiate from Russ, he's winning, right? And he's winning at a high clip, and he's putting up the pretty similar numbers to Russ, but on a more efficient manner. Like Russ is averaging a triple double. Yes, he's putting up insane, gaudy numbers, but he's putting it on 54% true shooting percentage, and Harden's putting it up on 60% true shooting percentage, and he's only averaging 1.8 rebounds away from averaging a triple-double himself. And as far as the rest of the field, I mean, his numbers are just so gaudy that it separates him from the pack a little bit. And the Rockets are on pace to win more than Cleveland, and they actually have a better defense in Cleveland right now. So I think it's going to separate them from LeBron James a little bit. As far as the, you know, Kawhi Leonard, I just think Harden was in the conversation for MVP like since the beginning of the season, and I just think, you know, Kawhi just doesn't have enough traction at this point in the season. His MVP candidacy really picked up like a month ago, and I just think that's kind of too late. Unfortunate for Kawhi, but I just think that's the way it is. And historically, I mean, even if you look at Basketball Reference, I mean, like Canada, like Harden's just likely to win. He has the perfect combination of winning, gaudy stats, efficiency, you know, all rum, all rolled up into a ball that it just makes for an enticing package for all sides, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, it's a crazy. I was talking to someone last week about this. This season has been nuts. When you consider the candidates that we have for most valuable player, I cannot remember a season like this in the recent past that where we've had four legitimate candidates, putting up these kind of crazy numbers. And as you mentioned just now, yeah, James Harden is one. What is it? 1.5, you said, rebounds away from per game from averaging a triple double as well. That's crazy. Yeah. This is a feat that hasn't happened in a season since the 60s. And now we've got two guys knocking on the door. And then you got LeBron James, who's averaging for a forward. He's averaging the most assists of any forward ever. Like there's so many things happening in this league, and I don't know if it's because of the way, I mean, it's got to be in part because of the way the league has changed towards 3-point shooting and moving the ball around instead of like low post play. But it's sort of incredible that we have these three guys doing these, or four or five guys, even if you want to count in like Isaiah Thomas, who's playing out of his mind. It's an incredible season. It's incredible. You know, the league is in an ultimate high place right now, I feel like. But for the Rockets fans, man, I imagine you're a Rockets fan, right? You don't just do this because.
Yeah, I'm a Rockets fan, but I'd like to think of myself as a little bit more objective as observer from the rest of the fan base. But yeah, I do classify myself as a Rockets fan.
Yeah, well, you know, I try and say that I'm a general fan of the NBA, and I can't stop talking about the Sixers. And see, I just did it again. So there you go. But yeah, man, it seems like it's a crazy fun season. And I think there's a bit of a narrative too for James Harden in order like to maybe win the MVP. Last year, the guy put up, I think it was 29 points and 7 assists, right? For the course of the season, was it 29 or 27 points? I want to say 29, but
yeah, it was 29.
It was 29 and 7 assists, right? And he was like 5 rebounds, something like that. It was, for anyone else, that was an incredible season. That was a really, really good season. He did not get nominated to the All-Star game. He didn't get put on a single NBA All-League or not All-Star team. What's the word I'm looking for?
All NBA.
Oh, thank you. Oh my God. All NBA. See, I told you I was tired.
Yeah.
He didn't make it onto a single All NBA team. He didn't get put in the All Star game. Nothing. He got like
no. He did make the All Star team, but
last year he made the All Star.
Yeah. He was put in as a reserve.
Oh, okay. So he didn't get elected into. All right. Sorry. My mistake. But still, he got snubbed from All NBA, and he got put in as a reserve. I think that's what it was stuck in my mind that he didn't get voted in directly. He was in reserve. Either way, it was an amazing season still last year. And I just don't think he got the accolades that he should have gotten because again, his defense was bad. But if you look at like the top candidates right now, except for Kawhi Leonard, all their defense is bad. Russell Westbrook is like mid-range in the pack. But I mean, this is really an offensive statistic. This is really an offensive award, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you look at the history of the MVP award, I mean, it generally goes to a guy who's conducting a top three offense, right? Like, if you look at the Pistons, like, that's just the way it's gone. Usually the guy who wins it happens to be one of the best teams in the NBA, and one of the best teams in the NBA usually has one of the best offenses in the NBA. And, I mean, even if you look at recent history, like Steph Curry, Steve Nash, I mean, these guys, Dirk Nowitzki, I mean, these guys aren't generally known for their defense. It is very much an offensive award, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think that's the thing that makes Kawhi Leonard really interesting in this race is because he's putting up some incredible numbers. He doesn't have the assists, and this is getting off topic, but he doesn't have the assists of the other guys. He doesn't have the playmaking ability of the other MVP candidates we're talking about. But he's making it up with defense, and that's what makes him such an interesting sort of dark horse candidate for this award. But anyway, back to James Harden. Yeah, I also have him in the lead right now, and I think it's just because I like his style of play. Really, you know, to be honest, I really watch. I like Everyone likes watching Russell Westbrook play because he's a maniac, because he just drives to the rim every time, right? He's sort of an unstoppable force, but he's also sort of a very selfish player in some ways. Like, he's averaging 10 rebounds a game because, for instance, the other night he just took a rebound out of one of his, you know, he took the rebound out of the hands of one of his teammates, sorry. And he does stuff like that that doesn't necessarily make the team better. Whereas James Harden, man, he has these gears. He's not just got like a, you know, fifth gear and he's driving straight ahead. He's got like three, four, five, and he has this ability to change pace and get so close to the rim and so close in the paint, and people just cannot figure out how to stop him. And in doing that, he's able to like get guys wide open or just dish it to your big man and, like, you know, for a dunk or whatever. But his ability to stop and start, his ability to see the floor and work the ball around so well is just, it's a lot of fun to watch. And for my money, I enjoy watching him play more than I do Russell Westbrook, which I think is probably the second leading candidate right now. How do you feel about it? How do you think does that make sense to you? Because you watch a lot more of the Rockets than I obviously do, especially being, you know, I'm on the East Coast and I can't usually stay up that late. What are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, Harden's a unique player, right? Because I've tried to look at this like from a historical context. Like, I can't really think of a player other than Manu Ginobili that really plays the way he does in a very unconventional manner, right? Like, you're mentioning the change of pace earlier, right? Like, and we don't typically look at Harden as an athletic guy, mm-hmm. but he does have some very athletic features, right? In the way, like, I think I saw a sports science feature, like, I think it was last year or this summer, something like that. Like, they rated James Harden in pretty much all aspects of athleticism, running, jumping, everything, right? And he scaled out to be average in everything except for stopping. Like, he was one of the best stoppers, like, like they've ever seen. Like, he was in the 99th percentile stoppers, right? Like, he was really good at just finding a way to slow down, right? And so that, I think that pretty much, you know, articulates how he plays basketball. He's really good at, he's really shifty when he's driving to the lane. Like, as you mentioned, he does have a whole bunch of gears when he's driving. Like there's guys like, you know, when you think you have him, right, he'll go full speed, right? Like, if you remember that game winning layup he had against Denver a couple nights ago, mm-hmm. Nobody thinks of Harden as going that fast. Like, nobody thinks of Harden as this really fast guy, but he can if he wants to, right?
Right.
And he has that in him. He just doesn't use it all the time. He's crafty with his change of pace, and I think that's unique from watching somebody like Russ, who's going 99 miles per hour all the time, right? And
right.
It's just different. And I think, yeah, he is. It is a lot more enjoyable to watch the Rockets. I enjoy. I hated watching the Rockets last year.
Oh,
I have
terrible.
No shame in saying that. Yeah, they were an eyesore, right?
Yeah,
one of the worst teams in the NBA to watch last year. And I don't blame anybody for saying that. It was just so bad. Like, and the chemistry was way off. It just felt like the Rockets were apathetic and they didn't try. It was really bad. And like, Harden was no he was a big issue. Like, his leadership was really came into question there, and a lot of that was just because he didn't try on defense. And now he believe it or not, he's trying a lot more on that end of the floor, and he's, you know, creating for his teammates a lot more than he did before under Mike D'Antoni. And it's really, really fun. Like, there's a lot of gifs this season of Harden doing a whole bunch of stupid things, like after making shots, like he'll like wave his arms like crazy. And like, I'm not sure if you've seen these, but like Rockets fans go crazy over this. Like he'll make a shot and he'll make some goofy expression. And like, that's just so fun to watch.
Yeah, it really is.
Because, him getting animated like that, it's just so fun to watch. And I think he has that going for him. Just the narrative shift from last year, where it was just dreadful to watch and it was a lot of ball stopping and it was awful, right? And to now, where they're one of the most fun teams in the NBA to watch, and like, they're a must watch on League Pass, and like, everybody's excited to watch like Rockets and at Warriors. Like, that's a marquee matchup that everybody wants to see. And like that, mainly because the Rockets are so much more watchable
for sure.
As a team And a lot of credit goes to Daryl Morey for putting shooters around James Harden, putting role guys. It's just an entire transformation that I think it's a big reason why he's ahead right now.
Totally. And let me speak to a few things that you mentioned. Was first of all, when you said he gets, you know, animated and he puts his arms in the air and makes all these goofy faces and he runs back with, you know, that's a lot of fun. That is essentially what sport is about, right? That's why we love it. That's why we feel like we are part of the game when he's getting excited and being goofy like that. We're like, yeah, we do that too. Like, that's what we're doing right now while we're watching you. So there's that element of it. It's so much more fun to watch a guy just have a good time. And I think this is part of the reason that Steph Curry got so popular too, right? Is because he just has fun on the court and people love that. They love to get, you know, excited when you're excited. And so there's that aspect of it. You mentioned the idea that like he's actually trying on defense now. So last year he was abominable on defense and we know that. And he's still not great, but 2 years ago when he was blasted the year before for not playing any defense, and there was all these gifs around, or gifs, however you want to say it, of him just like falling asleep on defense and what, you know, like really embarrassing stuff. He really turned it on 2 years ago and he became sort of a defensive player, right? Last year, he was very unhappy with his team. Like, he had Dwight Howard, the ultimate unteam guy, on his team. Like, I don't blame him one bit for being unhappy. And I talked about this a lot. Like, listen, if I had Dwight Howard on my team, I probably would quit. That's it. You know, I can't really blame him. Like, everywhere Dwight Howard goes, he makes the locker room bad, right? So, and you add all these things up, and it makes like sort of the perfect narrative to get this guy an MVP. To like, we all love a come from behind story. We all love a success story. Last year he came into the league out of shape. They were miserable. They were doing terrible. This year, he's transformed into an entirely different player. He's having so much fun, and D'Antoni is a huge part of that. And as you said, Daryl Morey has put some really good shooters around him. And speaking of, he put one of the guys around James Harden that I have long had a fascination with since he was on the Clippers years ago. And I thought this kid was going to be so freaking good, and he just got injured and injured and injured. And Eric Gordon is the guy I'm talking about, who just could not, it seemed like he couldn't get healthy for the longest time. I think it was his second year. He averaged like 23 points a game. He looked like he was going to be so much fun to watch for the next several years. He got injured. I think it was knee injuries or ankle injuries. He just couldn't get healthy. And then when he was on the Pelicans, which is also sort of a train wreck of a franchise, he didn't really have a whole lot of success there either. But when they picked him up this year, he's back up to, I think, the second or third highest points he's had in a season in his career. He's shooting 16 points a game, and he's fourth in the league in completed threes. Huge part of their success right now. So just to shift off to Harden, from Harden a little bit, what do you think of Eric Gordon's chances of becoming a sixth man of the year?
That's complicated, because this Lou Williams trade really mixed things up.
Like, yeah, it doesn't, like, help him, does it?
yeah. I mean, like, it really seemed like he was the front runner for a while, and then you add in another sixth man of the year candidate to the bench, and it takes the ball away from his hands a little bit, and it takes the shine away a little bit, right? Because there's going to be nights where Lou Williams goes off. I still think he's a front runner, in my opinion. Like, I just think he's been the leading sixth man of the year for a winning team for so long now, for so much of the season. And he's shifted his narrative like crazy. Like, I remember there were some questions on his contract when Rockets signed him, right? Because he was this injury-riddled guy who could never get healthy. And the Rockets decided by going through his medical reports and like talking to doctors that this was a really fluky thing with him. That was what they were reporting. Like, this was kind of like last year he broke his hand, and like that's just kind of a random thing that just happens, right?
Right.
And you can't really control for that. So like they thought, hey, I think you know, they're like, I think he can be healthy this year. That's what Daryl Morey basically said. Like, I think he'll be fine. And that gamble has really paid off for them. And the same thing goes for Ryan Anderson. I think Eric Gordon, like, I mean, this whole team is just an awesome story, right? Like, because, like guys like Ryan Anderson, like, if you read Ryan Anderson's SI story, like, I think it was by Chris Ballard, like, with his girlfriend going through everything and, like, the whole suicide stuff. And it was really, really dark. It got really dark for Ryan Anderson there. And he went through the back injuries. Like, and to see him, like, having – he's having a lot of fun, and he recently got married, and it's really cool. It's really, really cool to see what's Guys like Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson thriving in this system. I just felt like they needed the right organization, like the Houston Rockets, and the right coach to empower them to play the way they wanted to play. And it's really worked out for them. And they've really kind of revolutionized the way three-pointers are being shot, because they're really pulling up from like 3 point, from like 3 feet beyond the three-point line, and they're hitting threes from there. And it's really spacing out the defense like crazy. And it's making it really hard to guard James Harden, because it's really hard to guard him when he has three-point shooters around him. It's even harder to guard him when he has three-point shooters who you have to guard like 2 feet beyond the three-point line. That makes it nearly impossible to guard. And I'm happy for these guys. I just think the narrative shift in their careers, it's just really, really phenomenal.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny, I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to bring up the fact that the Rockets are shooting three-point shots from way beyond the arc. I think they're not only leading the league, but I think they're sort of setting some sort of new like NBA record for three-point shots beyond actually the three-point line, you know? So it's like a historically long-range shooting season for them, I think. Something of that nature, right? And Eric Gordon, I think for most of the season, wasn't he like leading the league in three-point percentage from just crazy distance? You know more about this than I do. I'm grasping at straws here.
And for a while, he was leading the league in made three-pointers. Like, he was ahead of Steph Curry for a little bit, right? And that was pretty fun to watch. I'm not sure where he stands right now, but he's up there. Like, the Rockets have 5 three-point shooters that are in the top 20 three-pointers made, which is pretty staggering. And it makes it really hard to defend. And, like, that's kind of what they're going for right now. Like, and Daryl Morey came out in an interview after the trade deadline, after they acquired Lou Williams, and he directly, like, unprompted, mentioned the Warriors. Like, he said, like, if we're gonna beat the Warriors, we're gonna beat them in, I quote, a barrage of three-point shooting. Like, that was his quote. Like, he wants to increase the variance. Like, if the Rockets get hot, they can beat pretty much anything in the NBA, and they think they can do that with the Warriors, and that's pretty much their strategy, which I find fascinating. I never thought about it like anybody attacking it like that. Like, the Rockets really targeted guys whose values were down, like Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon. Like, nobody really valued them that highly except for like Sacramento and, you know, just teams that like with bad franchises and bad reputations. Nobody really targeted them like that much, and they found an inefficiency in the market in three-point shooting, and they're really going for it with a lot of three-pointers. Like, they're shooting like 40 three-pointers a game, and after the All-Star break, I think it's even increased to like 45 or something like that.
Wow. I mean, and isn't that the Daryl Morey way too? Like, he tries to find the inefficiencies in the game and goes after those things. He's a very smart guy. He brought Sam Hinkie up, and I don't even need to tell you how I feel about Sam Hinkie, because you could probably tell by me talking about him right now.
I love Sam Hinkie.
Oh, hear me both.
I'm the biggest Sam Hinkie defender.
No, like, you're not. I am.
I hated the way that worked out in Philadelphia. There's nobody that despises the Colangelos more than me, and that's just because of the way that it just really felt really slimy. And
I can give you a run for your money, buddy.
No, I'm sure. And it was just I'm like 99% sure the next job Sam Hinkie's gonna have the job of his choosing, right?
Oh yeah,
because Sixers are making him look really good. Like, Joel Embiid made him look really good when he was healthy, and like the assets like Nerlens Noel and like Brian Colangelo like making dumb trades afterwards, like trading Nerlens Noel to Dallas for almost nothing. Like that helps him too, right?
For barely,
like, I really think like as soon as the season's over, I mean, this is just my opinion. I think there's going to be a historic opening in an office job. So I feel like that's coming. I feel like Phoenix, Sacramento, you know, Chicago. There's just a lot of really, really bad front offices. Like the Pelican. Like there's a lot of really, really bad front offices. I feel like, you know, Orlando. I can name a lot, right? There's a lot of really bad front offices. And I feel like once, you know, once all those jobs are cleared, I think Sam Nagy's going to have the job of his choosing. It's going to be really cool. It's interesting to see how that works out. We're getting off topic.
We are. Go ahead. I'm just going to say that I'm going to be the biggest fan of whatever team he goes to, and I'm going to be super pissed when they beat the Sixers every time. Anyway, totally off topic. But speaking of, like, finding the market inefficiencies and finding guys that are, like, you know, bench players that are performing under what they possibly could and stuff. Not only that, Daryl Morey had the foresight to, or the just the common sense to hire Mike D'Antoni. And listen, for me, I haven't always been the hugest Mike D'Antoni fan. I don't know. I like guys who coach a lot of defense. It's kind of boring, but I'm a defensive guy. You know, I like defensive teams, but I also love offense, obviously. And when he was in New York, and I got to see him all the time because I'm here. You know, that the Knicks team was terrible. Funny thing is, the last time the Knicks had a team with any good defense was when Mike D'Antoni was coaching them. So that's kind of crazy. But so they got D'Antoni, and he has been the perfect coach for this system, for this team, for these guys. It's sort of a perfect match. It's a match made in heaven, if you believe in such things. What do you think about D'Antoni's candidacy for Coach of the Year so far this year? I mean, I think he's on the short list to get it, honestly. He's done such, and especially, and I'm sorry if I'm rambling, but if you think about what a horrible show they were last year, as we were talking about earlier, to turn that around this quickly and have this much success and have James Harden vying for MVP, I think he's done a brilliant job. And I'm just going to let you talk about it right now because, you know, I'm sure you have plenty to say about this.
Yeah, I think the gap between Mike D'Antoni and second place for Coach of the Year is pretty big. Like, I guess second place is probably Eric Spoelstra. And, like, wherever you go, you hear, like, the front runner for the Coach of the Year is Mike D'Antoni. Like, I think he's going to win it. And right now, if anybody else wins it, it'd probably be a big upset. And this is pretty ironic because a lot of fans in Houston, including myself, like, I thought, like, we were really skeptical about the hire, right? Because it wasn't just the hire. Like, it was, like, where it was coming from. A lot of people thought Leslie Alexander, the owner of this team, like, they thought that the hire was coming from him. And, you know, and when ownership gets involved in management, it gets a little sketchy, right? Like, we've seen that in Sacramento. We've seen that in Phoenix. Yeah. Like, it gets it just gets hairy. Like, you want ownership to stay away. And apparently, after the hire, they came out and said, no, this was a group decision, right? Like, we all thought Mike D'Antoni was the guy. And, and looking back at it, I mean, I can't think of a better coach hiring this summer than Mike D'Antoni. I mean, if you really think about it, like Tom Thibodeau was the highest, like probably the highest coveted coach in the NBA, you know, last offseason. And Mike D'Antoni ended up being the coach that surprised everybody. Right. And I can't think of a better hire right now. And it's pretty insane because I could not in a million years imagine this going working out as great as it did. Like James Harden at the All-Star break, like, when he was asked about Mike D'Antoni, he said, like, he's my best friend. Like, that's pretty, like, insane to me. Like, and, like, this is, like, something that the Rockets really needed to get right? Like, after last year, they needed to get that coach hire, like, down. Like, that needed right. to be the number one thing, the number one objective going into free agency to find, like, and this is what I said. Like, I was writing a column about this, right? Like, the Rockets can't just find any coach. They need to find the coach that they believe is going to retire with James Harden. Like they need to find their Rick Carlisle, right? They need to find their Greg Popovich. They need to find their guy that's going to retire with their superstar, right? Like, I just think, like, this has to be James Harden's last coach. You have to go into every interview with that kind of thinking.
Yeah,
I think they did a good job of it. And, you know, as soon as they hired Mike D'Antoni, I mean, Daryl Morey went crazy in the offseason and hired the requisite talent to surround him, and it's just worked beautifully. And, the whole defense thing, like Mike D'Antoni's always had a bad rap for his defense. And I'll be honest, like, I really wanted the Rockets to hire a defensive coach.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, the Rockets are defending at a pretty average level. Like, and that's a lot better than last year. Like,
yeah.
they're 18th or 17th or something like that in the league in defensive rating. So that's around middle of the pack. And like, they were like 24th or 23rd last year, and that's a huge improvement. And Mike D'Antoni certainly does deserve some credit for that. And offensively, they're miles ahead of where they were last year. They were like the sixth, they're like the seventh offense in the NBA last year. They're first or second right now. They're kind of going back and forth with the Warriors.
Yeah.
And they're up there in terms of all-time offensive ratings. They're like almost there for the number one spot. They're battling with the Warriors right now. Basically, whoever ends up getting the number one offense in the NBA this season is going to get the number one offense of all time, which is pretty insane. But
that's really crazy, yeah. Well, going back to your point about...
That's where we are right now in the NBA.
Yeah, that's amazing. You have to be super happy as a Rockets fan. Going back to your point about, like, you know, that's a really glowing endorsement from James Harden about Mike D'Antoni, saying he's your best friend. Like, can you imagine if you're the coach of somebody and the thing he has to say about you is you're my best friend? That's pretty dope, man. Like, that's a really good endorsement. Yeah. Coming from one, like, the maybe the second best player in the league right now, or the first best player in the league, the most valuable player probably in the league, saying and endorsing you as your best, as his best friend. That's a huge endorsement. I don't even know how to say it. It's huge. Do you think any part of it has to do with Mike D'Antoni shaving his mustache, though? I mean,
that was rough. There's two sides to this, right? The mustache thing. This is a really polarizing topic, right? Like, I think Mike D'Antoni looks good without the mustache. Like,
I think
he looks fine. Yeah, I think he looks fine. But there's a huge uproar when he shaved it. Like, there's a cult following for that Mike D'Antoni mustache. I can't really blame them. Like, honestly, like I have some nostalgic feelings for that Mike D'Antoni Suns team, and yeah. Part of that, like 90% of my love for that Suns team, is Mike D'Antoni's mustache. Like, I can't lie. Like, that's just the way it is. And so, you know, I can understand the hard feelings towards shaving the mustache.
Hey, man, when I was growing up, most of my life, my young life, my father rocked a beard. And when one day I came home from school and he had shaved, I didn't even know who the man was. So I can kind of relate. It's a little jarring. But yeah, man, like I was actually going to make a real point here instead of clowning around like I do. But hey, whatever. Now, I think D'Antoni's been amazing for this team. I think it's been such a nice fitting with Harden. And like, okay, so they're second in points per game right now. That's huge. And as you were just mentioning, like, they're going back and forth with the Warriors, who are also like an all-time offensive team, right? So they're both in the all-time best offensive teams, which is great. I don't know where they stand, and I haven't looked those numbers up, but they're 10th in rebounds per game, which is also impressive because they lost Dwight Howard, or rather, you know, gave him the boot. He just left. Yeah. I know. Which is pretty incredible because they're getting a lot out of their guys. They're getting, like, Montrezl Harrell. He's been awesome. And Clint Capella has sort of come out of nowhere. I mean, I think last year, you know, people looking at him thought that maybe he was ready to take that step, and it seems like he really is. And I don't think they've missed anything in their rebounds. Obviously, they're still 10th in the league. They're second in assists, which means, you know, that system is working. Harden's sharing the ball. He's averaging 11 assists per game, but they're whipping the ball around, man. It's a lot. For me, it's the best style of offense you can play. Sharing the ball, moving the ball around.
It's so fun.
It's so fun
to watch.
And getting guys on the perimeter and drawing the defense out. And then, like, it opens. And, you know, I was going to make this point just to go back to James Harden again. If I had one comparison to compare him to, I would probably compare him to Le'Veon Bell from the Steelers. The way he stops. And do you watch the football at all? I don't know. But
a little bit.
Yeah, well, Le'Veon Bell did this whole thing like it was, you know, this year everybody was noticing how he just stops behind the line of scrimmage and then goes again and just, like, goes right through the line of scrimmage and gets, you know, lots of yards. It's kind of the same thing with Harden. I'm jumping around a little bit, but he's really shifty.
Really, really shifty.
And he's in the 95th percentile of stopping. Is that what you said? Who thinks of this statistic? Like, oh, he stops really well. Like,
I mean, he was among, like, the best athletes they've ever seen in stopping. Like, that was the athletic skill that James Harden had. Like, in all other categories, he was average, but in stopping, he was one of the best. Like,
and, you know,
and I just found that really compelling. Like,
it is very compelling. It's also very funny in a weird sort of way.
Yeah.
But I bet you people are going to start gauging players on their stopping ability. If they haven't done it already, they're going to be like, you know, oh, that guy stops really well. Look at that. He's changing the league. It's incredible. There, you know, the whole, like, I bet you in 20 years from now, the whole league is going to be filled with guys who just stop and shoot. it's kind of what they do
and
now.
Like,
but.
And, like, Harden's foul-drawing maneuvers, like, they're really out of the box. Like, I've never seen him, like, anybody draw fouls the way he does. Like, it, and, like,
oh, it's incredible.
This pisses a lot of people off, but honestly, I just think it's funny. Like, there's this new thing that he invented this season, right? Like, he waits for a screen on the three-point line, right? Mm-hmm. And generally, when you're going through a screen, like, your arms, like, you have no control of your arms. Right? You're trying to go under the screen or you're trying to go over the screen, right? Right. That's generally the two choices you have. So you're moving your arms while you're doing this, right? And so when you're moving your arms, he'll jump up and shoot a three. And, like, that's three free throws right there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And, like, no, I can't believe nobody's ever thought of this. Like, and Harden's thought of it. And, like, I remember, like reading a column a couple years ago. Like, they're teaching James Harden's moves, like, in foul drawing, like around the basket, like they're teaching it to high school kids.
Wow.
And around the league, you're seeing other guys develop it. Like yeah, I'm pretty sure, like D'Angelo Russell, like he's probably watching a lot of James Harden film. Like, and like, it's pretty crazy. Like, I'm pretty sure in a couple of years, you're going to see a new breed of guards that just know how to draw fouls. Like,
oh, yeah.
I think it's hilarious.
Like, well, you know, that's the other thing too. Like last year, it was annoying watching him play because he still did the same thing last year. He still got so many fouls called on, you know, for him. Like going in the lane, you can't stop him going to the rim because he's just so big and strong for a guard. And he knows how to draw a foul, man. He really, the one way I would put Harden over Westbrook as well is that I think Harden is such a cerebral player. Like, he really knows how to use his body to his advantage and against other players to draw fouls, you know? So he knows how to do that. And last year when the offense...
Going to that, I'm going to interrupt you for one second.
Yeah, like, go ahead.
There was an Oklahoma City at Rockets game a couple of months ago, right? And it came down to the final stretch, right? And I thought the final couple possessions were so descriptive to how they played. Like, they were the perfect metaphors to their games, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I remember Russell Westbrook came up and, like, he asked for the pick. He got the switch on to Harden, right? Like, Harden was guarding him, and then Russ just took a random three, right? And, like, the next play, like, he missed three. And the next play, Harden, like, the same thing happened. He called for a pick, right? And he got the double team. And so instead of like shooting or doing anything crazy with that double team, he found an open Nene at the basket for two free throws. And I just thought it was the perfect metaphor for their games.
Right. When you know that Russ probably would have just tried to shoot the double team and go to the rim, right? But
yeah,
Harden is so smart. And this is what's going to be my point. It's like last year he was still doing sort of the same thing. He was going to the rim a lot more rather than shooting. He was still shooting like crazy, obviously, but he was getting to the rim all the time and he was getting fouled, I think, more than anyone else in the league. But in last year's offense, it was annoying to watch. It was a bogged down. It bogged down the game. And while he was really being smart and getting fouls and using the system to his advantage, this year is just, it's a joy to watch, right? Because he doesn't even have to do that as much anymore. He still does. He knows how to put people in the wrong situation and get a foul call. And you're right. You can't stop him from getting those calls. He's really crafty at it. But it sounds like we're talking about his MVP candidacy again. It's all kind of the same thing, right? It's all blended together.
When you talk about the Rockets, you're gonna have to talk about Harden for like 30 minutes. I mean, it's he's the team. He's the team. Like the Harden goes down, the team goes down. That's just the way it is.
For sure. And okay, so then we were talking about D'Antoni's candidacy for Coach of the Year. I totally think so. They have MVP candidate. They have Coach of the Year candidate, and they have two Sixth Man of the Year candidates. Right? They've got to win something this year. But how far do you think Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And like the fact that they're like, you know, they're in the race for all these awards. I think it actually opens up them up for another award. All of this hardware just fuels Daryl Morey's Executive of the Year candidacy.
Oh yeah, like, that's a good one.
Because that's why what I think is unique about like the Rockets is like the fact that they're winning all these awards puts them in line for another award. Like,
right.
I just, it's really, because like when you talk about coach of the year, I mean, well, who hired Mike D'Antoni? Daryl
right.
Morey.
Right.
And you're talking about a sixth man of the year. Well, who signed Eric Gordon this year?
Exactly.
Daryl Morey. And even if Lou Williams gets sixth man of the year, who traded for Lou Williams this year? Daryl Morey. And like, I just find it so fascinating. Every piece of hardware there, they win. It's just fueling that other piece of hardware. It's pretty cool.
That's a good point. For some reason, I didn't even think of that. It never clicked in my head. But yeah, that's a really good point. They could get executive of the year as well, too. It's crazy. But all of this together, right? They could possibly win all of these awards, and it doesn't make a damn bit of difference if they don't win in the playoffs. So my question to you is, how far do you legitimately think they can get in the playoffs?
Well, if you're a Rockets fan, I'd say temper your expectations to like getting to the second round. Like, I think they're locked to get to the second round. Anything after that is a coin flip, right? Like, I think you can expect them to get past the first round and have a competitive second round. Like, that's their floor, right? And anything right. lower than that is a disappointment. Like, I think that's fair. I think if they lose in the first round, that's an automatic disappointment. And I'm not blaming anybody for killing the Rockets for having this great season and not winning the playoffs, right? That second round series against the Spurs, like, that's going to be tough, right? Like, the Rockets had really, really competitive games with the Spurs this year. And I think it's going to really go down to, like, a 6 or 7-game series.
We don't know that it's going to be the Spurs. Listen, anything can happen. You see upsets on occasion in the NBA. It happens way less in the NBA playoffs than it does in, like, in other sports, I guess, like the NFL. But it happens. I mean, right now as it stands, if the playoffs started today, they would play OKC, which would be so much fun on so many levels, right?
Yeah.
You have Harden and Westbrook. You have the exact same thing we were just talking about. And these two get compared a lot for the players they have around them, right? So, like, everyone says that Westbrook is doing so much with so little, and he, you know, with so little talent on his team, whereas Harden is doing the same basically with more talent, right? Or he's doing better with more talent. I don't necessarily think that's true. If you look at Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook has Enes Kanter, he's got Steven Adams, and I think those two guys are really good centers. I mean, they're both an upgrade from anything that, like, the Rockets have, right?
And Andre Roberson's good, too. He's one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. And, like, Victor Oladipo is pretty good. Yeah, he's a good developing project. And the thing is, you can make the case that they have the same amount of talent, but they're different kinds of talent, right?
Oh, yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, the Rockets' talent is tailored around James Harden in that they have shooters, right? And Russ's talent is kind of tailored around Russ in that they have really, really good defensive pieces that don't need the ball that much, right?
Right.
And like, in different ways, like, I find this really ironic. Like, when people say that the Rockets have so much more talent than Russ, well, before the season, Oklahoma City was projected to win more games than the Rockets by Vegas, by ESPN, by everybody.
Yeah.
It was just, and like, and everybody was calling Steven Adams like the next coming of Dwight Howard, right? Like, there was a discussion for like a few months there where people were talking about
Steven Adams being the best new center in the league. Yeah, right. I know. Go ahead.
Yeah, where the hell did all that go? Like, what happened to all that? Like,
he's still really good. Let's not, you know, but
yeah.
But
yeah,
I think
he is good. Like, but I'm saying, like, what the hell happened to all that? Like, so we're gonna just pretend like that didn't happen. Like we didn't see, like, we thought that Ryan Anderson was like really good. Like, did anybody really see those two signings of Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon to be anything more than like a waste of money? Because a lot of people thought the Rockets are spending too much on two guys that were too injury riddled, right?
Yeah.
That was the narrative around those signings. And now that they're succeeding, the narrative's kind of flipped. And I just think it's really ironic that that's happened. But I'm ranting now.
No, ran away. I totally agree with you. Yeah, people are, you know, Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon's corpses, like, they were resurrected from the dead. They could barely do anything. And yeah, and now they're this. This is the one thing that's been bothering me about this narrative, quote unquote, all season, is that, like, people are discounting the Oklahoma City's roster now because, you know, Russell Westbrook is doing everything. But no, man, like, Russell Westbrook is doing everything. That's the problem. I mean, yeah, they'd be sunk without him, but like, I feel like he's actually sort of hurting their progress or hurting their potential in a weird way, because it's just the guy Russell Westbrook is. It's why we love watching him play. It's why we love, you know, it's why he's so much fun, because he only has one gear. But I also believe, firmly believe, that's the reason that Kevin Durant's not with him anymore. I believe that's why their team isn't actually better than they are. You know, I mean, you've seen in the last couple of games, Westbrook has started to share the ball and try to, you know, make plays for his guy more than just take the ball to the rim every time. And he's been pretty successful in doing it. But like, why can't you do that all the time? But I mean, as you were just saying, Steven Adams was supposed to be the next number one young center in the league. And that's kind of gone away. And it's Kanter. He's even playing defense now, and his offensive game is insane, right? But, yeah. You know, nobody pays attention to that. They don't have any talent on their team. Like, no, that's crazy, man. Look what James Harden is doing with the Rockets. You can't tell me that their roster is much better than OKC. It just doesn't make sense to me. I see their roster. I know who they have. Stop lying to me.
I mean, if you think about it, like, I mean, both rosters have no all NBA players except for their number one guys.
Exactly.
Like, and so, like, I mean, I don't get, like, when people talk about how the Rockets have so much more talent than the Thunder, I mean, like who is, like, this Dwayne Wade that I've missed on the Rockets? I don't see, like, this crazy all-star on the Rockets that's next to James Harden. Like, I just think that James Harden's made these guys so much better.
Yeah.
Let's stick Ryan Anderson, for instance, because we were talking about him earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Anderson, like, for a long time, like, the narrative on him was quickly becoming, is he playable on a playoff team anymore, right? Like, is his defense so bad? Like can we still consider him a good piece on a championship roster, right? That was quickly becoming the narrative on him, right? Because his defense was so bad. But his offensive game is so important to the Rockets because of what James Harden has made of him, right?
Right.
And same thing for Clint Capella, right? Like, Clint Capella is, like, so much of his offense is dependent on really great passes from James Harden.
Yes.
Right? Like so much of his lobs come from Harden. Like, a lot. I remember reading a stat, like, I think it was towards the beginning of the season. I'm not sure if this is valid, but in the beginning of the season, I think, like, 86% of Clint Capella's, like, points were because of James Harden or
that
something like
right.
that. Like that. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't think anyone thinks of Clint Capella as an offensive creator.
I mean, yeah. That's basically what it is. Like Harden has made these guys what they are, not the other way around.
Right.
These guys aren't elevating the Rockets. Harden is elevating the Rockets.
And so there is exactly my point. That's a great storyline for Harden's MVP candidacy. Not great for them going into the playoffs, because, you know, in the playoffs things slow down and defenses ratchet up, and if you only have the one guy, which basically the Rockets have just the one guy, which, you know, teams are going to be able to focus in on him and take that away. I mean, it's going to be really hard to stop James Harden. It's just almost impossible. The same way it's almost impossible to stop LeBron James. Actually, it is impossible to stop LeBron James. But when you come up against a team like the Warriors or the Spurs, and they have a lot of guys that can just, you know, step in and sort of shut him down, it's a really tough road they have to travel to get to the championship. I don't see anyone getting past.
This is why we play the games, right? This is this is why the NBA playoffs is so damn fun.
Because
we don't know.
Yeah.
Right? Like 3 months ago, we thought the Warriors were locked to reach the finals. What happened to that now, right? Like, now the gap is open, right? And now the window is open for the teams like the Spurs, for the Rockets. Like, the gap is open for these teams, and even the Cavs won the title this year, right?
Right.
And I just think this is why it's so fascinating to watch the Rockets this year. And like, this is why the acquisition of Lou Williams is so fascinating. Is Daryl Morey's theory right? Like, can they really beat the Warriors through a barrage of three-pointers? Like, we don't know yet. We don't know that yet, right? Like, and that's what I'm so interested in seeing.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. I would love to see a second-round matchup with them, but I don't think they would end up there unless the Spurs get knocked out, right? So let's see. How would this go? If we have, I don't know.
They would reach the conference finals. They would be in the conference finals.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Rockets would have to reach the conference finals to beat the Warriors. So, I mean, like, that's, I mean, like, implicitly what Daryl Morey was saying was, like, he's confident enough in this roster to reach the conference finals, which is a huge step up from where we thought the Rockets would be, like, 4 months ago. Like, we thought this team was going to be first round out, a competitive first round out, granted. Like, that's what I thought. And we thought they were going to be like a 45-win team. They're headed to become a 56-win team. And according to the general manager, he thinks that they're good enough to reach the conference finals, right? Yeah, yeah. So that's a pretty big step up. I just think that's – if you're a Rockets fan, like, even if you don't reach the conference final, even if you get to the second round and are competitive with the Spurs for like a 6 or 7 game series, that's a successful season. Like, wrap it up. Like, you get Harden with the MVP and all these other awards. I think that's – much better than what you were gonna get like last like
oh my god yeah ago. it's leaps and bounds away. But I mean, you know, and then there you go too, like, if suppose they make it past OKC as it stands now and they end up playing San Antonio, that's also going to be a really fun matchup. The only thing is, I think they have James Harden kryptonite on that team with Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi can shut anyone down. That guy's he's just an evil genius on defense. So yeah,
and
man,
Danny Green too.
And Danny
Green's really good. Yeah. He's really good. He doesn't get enough credit for it. Like, he's like, in my opinion, he's like one of the 8 best perimeter defenders in the NBA. And nobody ever talks about him, but he's just that good, like, on defense.
You know, but hey, listen, upsets happen. They could get past them. They can get to the Warriors. I don't think the Warriors are a lock for the finals either, man. And like, you know, they're not going to have an easy road either. I think the West is just always so much more competitive. And there are a bunch of people that are thinking that the Rockets could sort of make a run. I don't know. I'm sure you're one of them, or at least hoping. And, you know, it's funny, as a fan, you can always trick yourself into believing that anything's possible. So isn't that really what fandom's about to begin with?
Yeah. And I mean, if you're an NBA fan, you have to be pretty happy. Like, cause I mean, like again, 3 months ago, we thought it was Warriors, Cavs. That's it. Right.
Yeah.
And now the playoffs in both conferences looks a lot more compelling than it was before. You have the rise of the Wizards in the East, right? And you have the deeper roster of the Toronto Raptors, right? The Celtics were a second seed this year. They have Al Horford. They have Isaiah Thomas making a big leap this year. And in the West, you have the rise of the Rockets, right? And the Spurs are still the Spurs. Now the Warriors have this fatal flaw in that, you know, Kevin Durant's hurt, and is he going to be healthy for the conference finals? Is he going to be good? Like, is he going to be like? Because remember, like, Steph had a similar injury last year in the playoffs, right? He had a grade 1 MCL sprain.
Mm-hmm.
KD has a grade 2 MCL sprain, right? And like, there's questions as to whether or not he's going to be the same. Like, how are the Warriors going to be when they reintegrate him? Like, I just think there's all these fascinating questions, and as an NBA fan, you have to be happy, even if you're not a Rockets, even if you're a Rockets fan, and like, the Rockets get eliminated. Like, this is a lot. We're in such a great place right now as a league, and I just think you have to be happy with it.
Oh, for sure. But let me ask you this real quick. You know, before we go, and I let you finish your drive back home. if they get knocked out in the second round, what do you hope they do in the offseason? What could you see them? What position or what? What moves would you like to see them make to get over that hump, to maybe get to the Western Conference Finals next year? Or maybe even to the finals, the NBA Finals. Do you think they can do something? What would you like to see them try and do?
If they make it to the second round and they lose in a competitive second round matchup to the Spurs, I think the Rockets really have to upgrade that small forward position. Like, Trevor Ariza was really good for so long.
Right.
But I think it's time to kind of upgrade that position and look for your small forward of the future, right? And also, like, if you can, like, throw your hat in the Gordon Hayward chase, right? Like, Gordon Hayward's probably not going to go to the Rockets, but I mean, like, why not? Like, just try to get a meeting with Gordon Hayward, right? And like, guys like that, like, try to be superstars, like, do what the Rockets do every year, get meetings with these guys, even if they're not going to sign them. Like, I think they should still be super aggressive. They should try to make the minor moves. And I just think, like the foundation for this roster is already set. Now you have to make the little moves. Like, and right. I think in the off season, you know, like, bearing some crazy acquisition, I just think you make the tiny moves to upgrade your defense, right? Because right now that's the big weakness for this team, right? Like, you're an average defense. How can you get that to become elite, right? So make those moves and see how far you can get with it, and then again next year. Right now the Rockets are so good that, like, like they're kind of like their window was open, right?
Yeah.
Like where,
but as we've seen in the past,
you have five or six
fast.
Attempts.
Yeah. Right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. You have like 4, 5, 6, whatever attempts to go at this, right? And if you win a championship, that's great. If you don't, I mean, you have this nice time where you're really successful and you're really competitive, and like you can look back at like the Phoenix Suns of like we look back at the Suns all the time, right? That was a fun time in basketball. That team was really like, there was a book, The 7 Seconds or Less, like that's one of the best basketball books I've ever read, right? And like it's because that team was so compelling, and like even with all these what ifs, like we're still talking about how they changed the face of basketball.
Yeah.
I think there could be a similar thing like that with the Rockets, like the amount of threes they shoot and how analytic dependent they are, like with this era of the Rockets. I even if you don't win the championship, I just think sustained success is always a good thing.
For sure. It's funny how the Suns are always come up as that team that like, yeah, they didn't win it, but they were awesome. So like, yeah, I don't think there's any harm in like getting just that close. I mean, you know, obviously you want to get over the hump and you want to win it. You want to be a championship team, but there's other joys.
Well, even as recent as the Memphis Grizzlies, right? Like we're going to look back at the great Grand Grizzlies in like 10, 15 years. I was like, that was a team that everybody loved, right? Like that was a team that like the underdog, hard hat, you know, Grizzlies that America could relate to. And
for sure.
I think, you know, like if you can have an era like that in your franchise, that's all you want, right? Like you want it. You just want to be really, really freaking good for like 5 or 6 year stretches. And that's all you can ask for.
I don't know. I think we both sound like abused fans that haven't won a championship in a long time. I think you really should want a championship, but whatever. Can't win everything. Anyway, Salman, again, thank you for coming on, and plug your stuff one more time and we'll get out of here.
Yeah, at Red Nation Hoops, if you want to follow me on Twitter, rednationhoops.com is the website. Lots of great stuff, lots of great posts there where you can read. And the podcast is the Red Nation Hoops podcast. Find it on iTunes and Stitcher.
Awesome. Thanks again. Get home safe, and I'm sure I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, man. Have a good time.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Well, there you go, guys and gals. Salman Ali from the Red Hoops Nation. Thanks again for coming on, and I will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.